Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, February 4th.
With the first action today, we're going to work to undo the moral and national shame of the previous administration that literally, not figuratively, ripped children from the arms of their families, their mothers and fathers at the border, and with no plan, none whatsoever, to reunify the children who are still in custody and their parents.
President Joe Biden, as he signed an executive order reversing the Trump administration's family separation policy for migrants seeking asylum or otherwise coming across the southern border. Later today, the president is expected to sign another order expanding the number of refugees the U.S. takes in after Trump had reduced that to historic lows. All of this is not getting much news coverage, as much as it should, because everyone's focusing on what to do about the QAnon Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. And not that that's not important, but we want to make sure these immigration developments also happening now that affect so many individuals and so many families so personally also get a spotlight today. The Washington Post reports that more than 5,000 children were separated there at the southern border in 2017 and 2018 in an attempt to deter other families from coming. The ACLU estimates at least 1,000 of those kids remain separated, though one of the problems is that the number and which children these are remain unclear to the public, in part because of obstacles that the Trump administration left. Here is Biden's newly confirmed Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas.
I am a father. I am a husband. I am a son. I am a brother. I have not heard before a pain as acute and heartbreaking as that. And it is our commitment to make sure that pain is not felt again.
Now, Mayorkas, if you haven't focused on himself, on him yet, he himself comes from a refugee family, but his confirmation drew more Republican opposition than any other Biden nominee so far, with more than 40 Republicans voting against confirming him. By way of background, I thought I would just talk about Mayorkas a little bit. Mark Hetfield, who's president and CEO of the Jewish Refugee Assistance Agency, HIAS, wrote this in the Times of Israel the other day about Mayorkas, who has been on Hayes' board. Quote, his family represents so much of the Jewish narrative in that arc. His mother's Romanian family was caught up in the Nazi onslaught and fled their home for parts entirely unknown. His father, a Cuban Jew of Sephardic origin, met and married the European refugee, the two of them starting a family, melding different worlds of Jewish culture. Then that young family was forced to flee yet again, and Ali left Cuba and grew up in Los Angeles, eventually working as a leader in the Obama administration, and most recently with us, the Jewish Refugee Agency, HIAS, to rescue, resettle, and welcome other refugees, unquote. With me now to talk about Biden's family reunification order and more of his immigration policy is Alora Mukherjee, director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at the Columbia University Law School here in New York. Ms. Mukherjee, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Could you begin by describing the current state of family separation and reunification, as you understand it, for the thousands of children and parents who were separated in 2017 and 2018 before the court's order to stop to it?
Right. There remain, as you say, thousands of children who are separated from their parents. A number of these, hundreds of these children do not know where their parents are. There are 500 plus missing parents who cannot be tracked down. The Biden administration issued an executive order on Tuesday that sets a task force The goal of that task force is to reunify families that were separated in 2017, 2018, and onwards. And the task force is given the mandate to issue recommendations in about 120 days. The task force is also supposed to identify where the missing parents are and figure out how to prevent this type of national tragedy from happening again.
I gather from the press reports that there are obstacles to doing what you just described as quickly as you and presumably the president would like, because of things the Trump administration put in place and left behind. If that's your understanding, can you explain some of that?
Sure. Well, it is really, really hard to find these missing parents. As a federal court judge found in the Miss L case, which is the ACLU's litigation challenging family separations, the federal government failed to make any accounting when separating children from their parents about which baby, which toddler, which young child belongs to which parent. So there were no records maintained by the Trump administration about which kids belong to which parents. The Trump administration, high-level policymakers subsequently denied that they failed to keep records, but that same finding that was made by the judge was subsequently also made by watchdog agencies, the Office of the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security and the Office of the Inspector General for the Department of Justice. And it is a massive task to try and figure out where these parents are and how to reunite them with their children. That said, there are incredible advocates in the nonprofit space who are trying to track down these parents, literally walking through Central America, going from town to town, village to village, in an effort to find these missing parents.
Do you have a role in this at the Columbia Law School Immigration Rights Clinic?
Well, we are not in a position to be doing the on-the-ground work in Central America right now. That said, since 2018, our clinic has been representing families who have been ripped apart by the Trump administration. My first case, our clinic's first case on this matter, was representation of baby Constantine, the four-month-old baby who was ripped apart from his father, an asylum seeker, when the baby in his father's arms approached the U.S. border and went up. The father went up to the Customs and Border Patrol agents and explained that they were fearful of returning to their home country and they were scared of persecution. They were brought into a Customs and Border Patrol holding station, held in a room for a number of hours, and then baby Constantine was literally ripped apart from his father, and it took the father weeks to learn about his baby's whereabouts, and it was extremely traumatic and distressing, both for baby Constantine and also for his father. Now, since then, our clinic has continued to do work on behalf of children and families who were separated at the border. We are currently representing children who are in the United States, but whose parents remain in the home countries. Their parents were deported to Central American countries, and these children have not seen their parents for years now. And they, both parents and children, mothers, fathers, and children, even young children, remain devastated by these separations.
To follow up on what you were just saying before I reset there and invited callers, there's more that advocates say need to be done with respect to the separated families. Reading from a Washington Post article here, it says ACLU attorney Lee Gelernt, the lead lawyer in the family separation lawsuit, said the creation of a task force, as the president announced there, was expected. Now more concrete pledges are needed. And it goes on to say, that advocates have emphasized the need not only to reunite families, but also to provide them with protection from deportation and a path to citizenship. When a court ordered the Trump administration to reunite families in 2018, many reunited parents were not given any legal status, making them immediately deportable and raising the prospect of re-separation. So I gather from that that President Biden has not gone that far so far?
No, he has not gone that far. The task force is set up to recommend how to proceed, but the executive order so far does not offer pathways to legal status for these children and families. And Brian, in addition to what you've mentioned about the need for a path to legalization for these families that have been subjected to among the worst human rights abuses and atrocities in modern American times, there also needs to be additional supports given to these families. Every one of these families, every one of these kids, moms, dads, has been traumatized by having their families ripped apart. They need mental health supports. A federal court last year ordered that a number of these families be offered mental health services. They should also be given some kind of compensation as a token of recognition of the harms intentionally inflicted by the U.S. government on them. I don't think any amount of money damages could ever compensate families in this situation, but a token of financial support would go a long way, both as recognition and an effort to support these families that have been through so much.
Here's a question from a listener on Twitter. Listener Erica writes, question for your guest, why wouldn't the people involved with separating kids from their parents and not keeping records of this be held accountable legally? Isn't there national or international law at play here? Isn't it tantamount to child abuse?
Thank you for that really great question, Erica. And it is a question that is on the minds of many people in America and also internationally. Should those in the Trump administration who created these policies knowing that they would inflict extraordinary trauma on babies, toddlers, children, and their parents, should they be prosecuted and held accountable? People are asking that question. They are asking if this is tantamount to kidnapping. You know, I think that there are many in the advocacy community that believe that those at the highest levels of the Trump administration should be prosecuted for these actions that are tantamount to crimes. And there are also questions about how far down would such prosecutions go? Should the line level officers who were tasked with ripping babies apart from their moms in cages and separating them and putting them in different cages, should they also be held accountable? How do we deal with complicity in the system from the top to the bottom? There are really hard questions to answer.
Here's another question via Twitter. The tweets are as good as the phone calls today. So listener Captain Critical, as Captain Critical goes by on Twitter, writes, my father was listening to Fox last night, and Fox is claiming that parents willingly left their children on the American side, of the border, so they could be sent to relatives. Any truth to this, or is Fox trying to rewrite history? Asks Captain Critical.
Thank you, Captain Critical, for your really great question. Once families entered the United States in 2017 during the pilot program that was separating families, and then in 2018 pursuant to a nationwide policy to separate families along the southern border, the parents and the children enter together and were taken apart. That is the policy that the task force set forth in Tuesday's executive order. That's the policy that the Biden administration is trying to address. Now, as to your question about, are there ever instances where parents take their children to the United States and leave their children at the southern border? You know, I have done work on the southern side of the border. My students and I have been to Juarez and we've been to Tijuana, and I represent asylum seekers in Matamoros. And in the course of doing that work, I have come across one mother who stayed in Mexico and brought her children to the port of entry on the U.S. side. And she was the exception in the work that I have seen in my time over the years working with hundreds and hundreds of asylum-seeking families.
So you're saying only one out of the hundreds of asylum-seeking families who you've worked with did that? No, only one?
That is what I have seen personally in my time. So I think that it has happened, but I think it is a tiny fraction of what is happening across the southern border.
Let me ask you one follow-up to that question. Another thing we hear frequently, did hear from the Trump administration when they were in power and from some of the supporters of this policy still, that when a child is brought across the border by an adult, the U.S. authorities don't know whether the adult is really the parent or some kind of smuggler who may be abusing the child or who knows what. And so it's in the child's interest to separate the child and then ascertain the status. Is there any truth to that in your experience?
Right. I do not want anyone to be abusing or trafficking children into the United States, right? That is everyone's worst nightmare. That said, there are mechanisms for dealing with potential smugglers. And what I have seen over and over and over in my years of working with children who are seeking asylum and children who end up in U.S. detention facilities, work that I started in January of 2007, what I have seen over and over is that children enter the country with their parent, or they enter the country with an adult caregiver who is tasked with caring for them, who has raised them. So I'm thinking right now back to three sisters, ages 4, 8, and 12, who I met during the summer of 2019. They were detained at what became a notorious Customs and Border Patrol facility in Clint, Texas. And they entered the country with their beloved grandmother, their abuelita. And the four of them, after they had entered the United States, they were brought to a cage, a literal cage, where they were crowded in with other female children and adults who were all seeking asylum. And these girls had tried to cuddle up with their grandma. And at 3 a.m. in the morning, their grandma was literally ripped apart from their arms and taken out of that cage. And she was pleading with the Border Patrol agent saying, look, I have the papers showing that I am their grandma, I am the one who is supposed to take care of them. But the children, these three sisters, 4, 8, and 12, they were separated from their grandma, brought to a different facility. And when I met with the girls weeks later, they had not spoken with their grandma at all. They had no idea where she was, and they had no idea if they would ever see her again. So there are ways to approach this family separation issue from a humanitarian perspective. And you can imagine co-locating Office of Refugee Resettlement offices with Department of Homeland Security CBP offices in the same location so that children aren't being ripped apart from their adult caregivers, and appropriate screenings can be put in place to determine whether a child is with a trusted adult caregiver who has a genuine bona fide relationship with them, or if instead this is a relationship that raises some concern. And if it is a relationship that raises some concern, everyone, I think, would be on board with separating the child from that adult.
But that's not what they were doing.
That's not what happens in the United States every day.
Before you go, I do want to touch on what we're expecting today, which is the president expected to announce a new policy regarding refugees. Are you familiar with that? Are you expecting something in particular? And do you think this is going to be primarily about a number? Because if you go back to the Reagan administration, the U.S. was admitting hundreds of thousands of refugees per year. At the end of the Obama administration, it was about 100,000, the last number that they had as they were raising it in the last years of the Obama administration because of the crisis stemming from the Syrian civil war. Trump has taken it down to 15,000 merely, a record low in the modern history of this country. So what are you expecting numerically or qualitatively?
Right, Brian. Thanks for going through those numbers. I think they're really important for everyone to have some context of what's going on. And I will add to the 15,000 number to say that although that is the cap that Trump placed on the refugees that could enter, as of December of last year, fewer than 1,000 refugees had actually been processed in American communities. So the 15,000 number is misleading. Fewer than 1,000 refugees were actually brought to the U.S. Now, in terms of what we can expect today, I am not sure that we're going to see a hard number coming from the Biden administration today. During the campaign, President Biden had mentioned the number 125,000 refugees for the first year in office. It is unclear whether that number can actually be processed given the evisceration, the gutting of the refugee processing system over the past 4 years. So I anticipate that we're going to see actions to rebuild the refugee processing system and perhaps an ambitious numerical cap too.
Laura Mukherjee, Director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at the Columbia University Law School here in New York. So many things to keep our eyes on all at once at the policy level. Listeners, don't get distracted by the politics in Congress and the personality politics in Congress, even though that's important too. There is so much going on in the new administration with respect to climate. There's so much going on with respect to racial justice. There's so much going on with respect to immigration, as we've touched on some of this morning with Laura Mukherjee. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.